All right. We had a quick video, but we'll skip that. So, hey, if we haven't had a chance to meet yet, I'm John Nixon. I'm the next-gen pastor here at North Park. So I get to give direction and leadership to the kids, student ministry, and then our young adults. And I get to work directly with the student ministry and a great team of volunteers there in our breakaway ministry. So our new pastor, Phil Severn, will be back next week. And next Sunday is a really big day for us. We've traveled an incredible journey this past year, and a lot of things are now coming to fruition. We've got a new pastor. We've been working on a new constitution and bylaws, and we'll be voting on that next week. So next week, during the discipleship hour, we'll be here together in the auditorium, and we'll be voting on that constitution. And then we'll also be talking about the transition, because part of the constitution is a new leadership structure, and we'll be laying out the details for that transition. But then also, Phil will be preaching, and his message will come out of a weekend that we had last weekend with the deacons and pastors, and just looking at where we're going in the next year. And so that'll be really exciting. And then we will have lunch together. So make sure you look in the bulletin there and see what you should bring. And if in doubt, always just bring some chocolate. And that usually works, all right? But we're looking forward to a really good family day next week. And Phil will be back preaching. So, you ever said something and then even before you finished what you were saying, or maybe just after you finished it, maybe it'll be a little bit later, but you just wish you could take it back? Probably all of us have been there. When I met my wife at Clearwater Christian College, she was attending a church there in Tampa, and that pastor ended up doing our wedding. And that pastor encouraged us that he would do a good job by telling us a story about when he did his daughter's wedding. And as he did the wedding, he didn't realize he was saying it, but when it came time to talk to her fiancé, soon-to-be husband, during that ceremony, instead of saying his name, he was saying her old boyfriend's name. And he did that 3 times. And somehow he thought that would be encouraging for him to tell us before he did our wedding. So when I got started in the ministry, and the pastor that I was under, he helped me. You know, we've got these secret little black books, you know, and so you guys can't really see that. But what we do is print that out, and it would have the name everywhere that I was going to say the name. And then when I would do another wedding, I would change the name. So I'm not real techie and don't understand software and programs that much. But so I didn't realize there's a function that you can actually just say, hey, wherever this word is, change it everywhere that it is. And so I was doing a wedding of 2 of our students from the youth group, and we're talking there and going through it, and all of a sudden I realized that I didn't change one of the names for the guy. So in my mind, I'm going, that's the wrong name. And I'm trying to think of his name, but now I'm under pressure and I can't remember his name. And so rather than saying something, I made a joke, which is my way of alleviating stressful situations. And I just said something like, hey, what is your name anyway? And everybody laughed, and then we moved on. Because I didn't want to be that guy who said the wrong thing. But we've all been there, haven't we? Maybe it's we say something to a family member, and we see the pain in their eyes. And we realize, oh, why did I say that? If I could only take that back. Maybe it's a coworker, a friend, maybe a church member, maybe a neighbor, maybe even a stranger. That guy at Lowe's who says he knows everything but can't find that part for you. Right? Or that fast food line that you're in and it's going really slow and then they get everything wrong. And you respond and immediately you go, oh, that wasn't the right thing to say. So we've all been there. Maybe it's a sarcastic or mean thing that we say. Maybe it's a joke that we say, but there's a little too much truth in it. Maybe it's a passive aggressive post that we put on social media or a text that we send. Maybe it's when we take a jab at someone behind their back. Maybe it's when we've promised confidentiality, we end up sharing that secret. And immediately we know, oh, I shouldn't have done that. Or maybe it's when we expose somebody else's insecurities, and especially in front of other people. So when we say something like that, why do we regret it? It could be the negative consequences of the situation. Maybe we really do care what people think about us. Maybe we genuinely feel bad. But I think the underlying reason that sometimes we say something and immediately want to take it back is because we all understand the incredible power of words. And we know it from experience because we've spoken them and then want to take it back. But we also know because we've been on the receiving end of words that people have said to us that we know cause great pain or it burned the relationship, or it left a scar. So this idea of words and the power of words and using them right or wrong, it's nothing new. It's been around for thousands of years. And so it's no surprise when we turn to the Bible that the Bible has a lot to say about the power of our words and a lot of encouragement about what to do with our words. So I want to invite you this morning to turn to the book of James. If you're not familiar with your Bible or you're new to it, I've got a table of contents there in the New Testament. You'll find that right after the book of Hebrews and before 1 Peter. But the book of James, we're going to be in James chapter 3. James is written by the half-brother of Jesus, and there's something you should know about James if you've not read a lot in there. He's a pretty direct guy. Gets right to the point. He's pretty blunt. And so some of this language that we'll read about our words, our tongue, is very shocking. But we're going to be in James chapter 3, verses 6 through 8. And if you want to turn in your own device or Bible there, but we'll also have it up on the screen from the New Living Translation so we can all follow along together. In verse 5, James says that the tongue is just a real tiny member of our body, all right? And just for the kids in here, I wanted to prove that because they always get in trouble. But I want everybody, kids and adults, just look around somebody and just stick your tongue out. I promise you won't get in trouble, kids. I mean, look at that tongue. It's just a small member of our body. And there's a medical picture, anatomy of the tongue, right? But think about the tongue. The average tongue is 2 ounces of muscle, mucous membrane, nerves, and it's used to chew, to taste, to swallow, and sometimes to express our feelings, but also to talk. In verse 6, James chapter 3, James says this, "The tongue is a flame of fire. It is a whole world of wickedness, corrupting your entire body. It can set your whole life on fire, for it is set on fire by hell itself." I told you, James is pretty direct. Man, that little member of our body is a fire, a world of wickedness. And actually, the sin that it produces, the source of it is hell itself. Look at verse 7. "People can tame all kinds of animals and birds and reptiles and fish, but who can tame the tongue?" Say it out loud. Who can tame the tongue? No one. No one can 100% completely control their tongue and the words that they speak. It is restless and evil, full of deadly poison. So when we think about the power of words, James is saying, hey, you need to remember and think about something before you speak. You need to remember to use it carefully. Use with caution. Because you can do great damage and bring great destruction simply with your words. Now, as we think about those kinds of destructive words, the Bible has lots of different categories. And this morning, I just want to touch on one. And that is criticism and complaining. We all know that person, right? That is the complainer, who is the critic. And a lot of times it's easier to see it in other people than ourselves. But as we would describe that person, this is the person that always thinks something is wrong. Something's always bad, right? That needs to be done differently. And this didn't work out so well. And the weather's too cold, and in a few months it'll be too hot. The room is too crowded. The boss is too bossy. Food is too spicy. Kids are too busy. The music is too slow. Gas prices are too high. My pay is too low. The sermon is too boring. All right. I purposely didn't use the word long. And these people, even when they want to do something admirable, when they want to speak the truth to be helpful, in their mind is this idea is, my responsibility is just to be honest, right? I'm to speak the truth in love, and it's lacking in the love, and it's very high on the truth. But I hope you know that to just speak the truth without any other thought is seldom very helpful. In fact, John MacArthur, a pastor here in the United States, has said this, "Raw truth is seldom appropriate and is often destructive." So even truth needs to be thought out. Delivering it in love, as we'll see in a little bit, requires some thought and thinking about who am I speaking to and what's the situation And what is it that this person needs? So someone who is a critic and is a complainer, their words have great power. And because of that, is that the kind of person that we like to be around? Normally, when they come into a room, it just drains the energy out of the room. We get to the point where we want to avoid those kinds of people because their words have power, and criticism and complaining destroys relationships and it destroys community. And there's been a lot of research done related to this. The University of Denver did a study on marriages, and they found that in marriages where there were 10 negative comments for every 100 positive, or out of every 100. 10 negative out of every 100 messages. That was one of the highest indicators for divorce. In other words, one of the spouse or both were complainers and criticizers. In the workplace, there was a book written called The Carrot Principle. 10-year study, 200,000 employees. They found that 79% of the employees who quit cited a lack of encouragement and a culture of criticism. So we find this is true not only in our families and churches, but in workplaces and in marriages. And this is especially significant for those of us who are followers of Christ. Because Christians are builders, not destroyers. Jesus has called us to use our words to build up and not tear down. And if you'd like to take notes, there's an insert in the bulletin. That would be something good to write down. Christians are builders, not destroyers. We see that in James chapter 3, going back to verse 10. James says, "And so blessing and cursing come pouring out of the same mouth. Surely, my brothers and sisters," read the next part with me, "this is not right." Say that again out loud with me. "This is not right." Right. So it's possible that you and I gather in a service like this, and we sing wonderful songs to God and about God and praise Jesus and his love in our life. And then even before we leave the building, we talk bad about somebody in our congregation. We use our words in a destructive way. And James says, this is not right. And it's not just a, you shouldn't do that. It's really like, how can that be? A heart that belongs to God should be building other people up, not tearing them down. He gives us a couple of examples. He says, "Does a spring of water bubble out with both fresh water and bitter water? And does a fig tree produce olives or a grapevine produce figs? No, you can't draw fresh water from salty water." And so the purpose of today as we gather to look at the scriptures together is to try to encourage each and every one of us to weigh more carefully every word that we would say, every word that we would use, because our words have great power. And we've all seen the power of a word, the right word spoken at the right time in the lives of another person. I was reading this week online, there's an urban legend, meaning that there might be some truth in this, but we can't determine all of the truth. But at one point, the British were building a new train, locomotive, a high-speed travel, and they heard that in the United States here, our Aviation Association has a chicken gun. How many of you guys have heard of that? The chicken gun is a device that shoots dead chickens, no live chickens, just dead ones, at our airplane's windshields to see if they're strong enough. The idea is that if they can shoot a dead chicken at the windshield, and the windshield withstands it, then when they're flying at the high speeds that they are, if they hit a bird, the windshield will not crack. So our Aviation Association sent that over to the British, and they tried it out on their locomotive. And to their surprise, when they shot their chicken at the windshield of their locomotive, it smashed right through it. It went through the engineer's chair, and it embedded itself in the back wall. And they're like, what in the world? So they contacted the FAA and asked, hey, here's what we did. Did we miss anything? And the FAA sent back, thaw the chicken before you shoot it. Now, wouldn't that have been nice to know before, right? So we do know sometimes it's important to get the right word at the right time when we speak to other people. And there is such great value when that happens. Last week, Phil talked to us about core lies that we have in our life. And he said we need to learn to speak the truth to ourselves. Not find ourselves like society would tell us, but we need to learn to speak God's truth to ourselves. This week, what we're talking about is, what do we do when we speak to other people? And how do we build them up? So to look at that, I want to invite you to turn to the book of Ephesians. Here's a table of contents again, if you're not familiar with it. Little helpful hint, this is what we teach the students. It works for me too, but you see those books there, Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, and Colossians? If you look at the first letters, that could be General Electric Power Company. Or I prefer to go eat popcorn. So that's how I find those books, all right? Each of those are cities that Paul, the traveling missionary, went to and preached the gospel and established churches. And what we have are letters written back. So letter written back to the church at Ephesus about very practical stuff. We're going to be in chapter 4 and verse 29. And there Paul says to the people, don't use foul or abusive language, but instead let everything you say be good and helpful so that your words will be an encouragement to those who hear them. Now, the word foul there, or abusive, really has the idea of fruit or fish that have been rotten, even like sitting out in the sun. So I brought these bananas from home, and they're beginning to get overripe. But there is something good you can do with overripe bananas, right? What is that? Banana bread. So, unless you're making banana bread, though, if you like to eat bananas, if we let these sit another couple of days, they're really not good for anything, so what should we do with them? We probably throw them out, right? So, rotten, foul, abusive language. It's rotten. It's not good for anything. It's not useful. Paul says that kind of language, the kind of language that would tear people down, it's not useful. You throw it away. It's throwaway language. So a question for us is, how much of the words that we speak in a day are really just throwaway language? They're not really useful. And Paul says, instead, let, this is what we should do, everything you say be good and helpful and be an encouragement. The word good there is really the word of building up. It's the word edify. It's like a building, a structure that's built up. Or in Bible times, when a family got a couple got married, oftentimes they would come and add a room on to their parents' house. You guys still up for that? And each one that got married. So it was important in a rural society that your family was large and big and could help sustain the family. But it was the idea of expanding or building up. Paul says that's the kind of words we need to use when we speak to other people. He says they need to be helpful. The idea is that it will meet their needs. It will meet their needs for the time that they're going through right now, for the situation that they're in. It will meet their needs for the spiritual condition of their heart. So speaking really isn't about me and what I want to say. Paul says speaking really should be about how do I meet the needs of other people around me. And then he says lastly, so it can be an encouragement. And that word encouragement really has the foundation for it is grace. The King James, I think, says, so that we'll minister grace to the hearers. Grace, something that's not deserved, something good. So we have an opportunity to be a conduit for God's grace through our words, so that we'll benefit the person to whom we are speaking. And so every day we have an opportunity to speak the right words at the right time into the life of someone who needs it. That person might be worn out and exhausted, and they just need a little bit of encouragement. We have that opportunity. We have an opportunity to speak and give dignity to somebody who maybe feels like they're worthless. We have an opportunity to comfort somebody who's going through a really dark season. And we get to speak the right word at the right time and help lift them up. Or to encourage someone who's hurting. These are the kind of words that Paul encourages us to use. There's great power in our words. They can be destructive or they can build up. It's like a dad who took his two-year-old to the grocery store. The two-year-old's in the cart and doing what two-year-olds do and eventually gets frustrated and starts throwing a tantrum. So the dad is overheard saying, Jimmy, just be calm. Jimmy, it'll be okay. Jimmy, we can make it through this. And there's a lady who's over just off to the side watching this, and she's really impressed with this dad. And so she decides to go and talk to him. So I just want to compliment you on the way you're talking to Jimmy. You're being so patient. And the guy looks at the lady and says, "Lady, I'm Jimmy." And sometimes that's how we feel in the situation and in life. We feel like maybe the only thing we can do is talk to ourselves. But what a huge blessing, a gift it is when someone else comes along and they can offer us a word, maybe even a word of God, a word based on his truth, a kind word, an encouraging word, a word that meets my need for the situation I'm in right now, one that brings grace into my life. So the question this morning is, do we see ourselves as builders? Do we seek to use our words to build other people up? Because that's the power that we have with words. This past year, one of the goals that we had was to bring in a church consultant to help us evaluate our ministries and to help us see where we needed to go for the future. And by God's grace, we've accomplished a lot of what he came and talked to us about. Some of you know that part of what we did when he was here is we had 30 people from the congregation that took a church survey. And it's through a ministry that identifies 8 different characteristics of a healthy church. And they found that having 30 people take the survey, whether it's a church our size or a little smaller or even a lot bigger, helps give a very accurate picture of what's going on in the church. And so we took that survey, 30 of you did, and then he met with several of you in different focus groups related to one particular area, which was our worship service, and many of the things that we've been working on came from that. And at some point, we may take the survey again, or we may find a way, a helpful way to share more of that information. But there were 2 responses on the survey that really caught my attention and really were the impetus for this sermon. When you look at the scoring of the survey, 65, that top line, is a high score. 50 is average, and 35 is low. So I want to give you the category, and before we show you, I want you to think or maybe try to guess what you would rate your experience here at North Park from 0 to 70, all right? Here was the statement. The atmosphere of our church is strongly influenced by praise and compliments. The atmosphere of our church is strongly influenced by praise and compliments. You don't have to say it out loud or we won't have you raise your hand or anything. But just what would you expect North Park to be at? We were surprised at the low score. It was 24. You can go ahead and put that up there. 24. As far as it being an atmosphere of praise and compliments. There was one other question that actually was the lowest score of any question in the whole survey. Because some of the things, as we've looked at it, we know that it's been a rough and challenging couple of years. And so we think that probably some of the scores are lower just because of maybe some discouragement and some of the challenge. But this next one wasn't about the atmosphere. It was a personal question about how do you respond to people when they do a good job? Do you tell them? And this was the lowest score in the whole survey. It was an 8. That when I see people do a good job, I tell them. So again, the purpose isn't to admonish us. It's not to say, oh, look at us, we're really horrible in this area. It really is just to try to get us to evaluate. Remember, our goal this morning is we want each of us to consider carefully the words that we use. And not just the words that we say, but possibly some of the words we don't say. And so as I thought about this, and I thought, why is it maybe that we don't give praise and compliments? Not just here at church. I'm sure that we would find that that's often true at home and in our workplace and in our neighborhoods. Why would it be that sometimes we don't offer praise and compliments? Or when we see someone do a good job, we don't tell them? Here's a couple of reasons that I came up with. Number 1, maybe we think that people already know. Somebody else has probably already told them that. They probably already know they do a good job with the music here. They probably already know that I appreciate what they do in the nursery. They probably already know that I appreciate that they welcome and greet people. They probably already know that I appreciate that they are an encouragement. So it might be we think they already know. Secondly, for some of us, it could be awkward. You know, for us guys, maybe it's easier to go up and say, "Hey, who do you think is going to win the football game?" than to go up and say, "Hey, I saw you with your kids in the foyer out there. Is your name Jimmy?" No, I'm just kidding. But for real, I appreciate the tenderness that you show to your kids. I appreciate that you get down on a knee to talk to your young son there. I wish I'd have had that kind of bond with my dad, right? That could be awkward maybe to say that. So maybe to focus on being maybe a little more spiritual with our comments or a little more thoughtful or maybe showing a little more emotion, for whatever reason, maybe it's just kind of awkward. And that leads to the third one. Sometimes it just feels better to be negative, right? When somebody's rubbing me the wrong way or I feel like they're not doing a good job, rather than thinking about something positive I can go and say to them, it feels better maybe to just go up and just say, "Hey, you know, I don't think this worked right, and I think you should change that." And you go away going, "Whoa, I feel so much better." Or when we're in a group, it isn't just junior high and high school or elementary where negative comments or maybe making a joke at someone's expense is more fun. It happens in adult circles too. And it happens at home. It happens in church. It happens at work. So sometimes, if we're honest, it's just more fun to say the negative. But I think there's one other reason. I think this is probably the most common reason that maybe we don't say it. And it's simply this. Even though we've experienced it from other people, we know the huge impact and encouragement it is when somebody speaks into our life. But we don't really believe that our words will have that same effect in other people's lives. Maybe we just don't really think that me going out of my way to say something to build somebody up is really going to make all that much difference in their life. Maybe we just think they're already so spiritual, they seem so strong, they seem to love what they're doing, they really don't need a praise or a compliment from me. And so we don't say anything. The book of Proverbs is a really helpful book, written a lot by Solomon, the wisest man who ever lived, but some others. Short, wise sayings that take in a lot of our experience in life. Can we just read a few of those together? You follow along there as I read. 12:18, some people make cutting remarks, but the words of the wise bring what? Healing. Hear that. Your words, spoken with wisdom, can bring healing in someone's life. Gentle words are a tree of life. 15:23, everyone enjoys a fitting reply, one that is the right word at the right moment in the right circumstance. It is wonderful to say the right thing at the right time. Couple more. Kind words are like honey. All right, now we're talking. How many of you guys like sweet things? Sugar, chocolate, cake. I see all these kids raising their hands, right? Kind words are like that. Sweet to the soul, and notice, even healthy for the body. And there are so many studies that show when we are happy, when we feel loved, that it affects even our spirit, our physical health. All right, and the last one, the tongue can bring death. That's true, James chapter 3. But it also can bring life. So this morning, will you hear from me, even as I talk to myself? We need to speak positive words of encouragement. We need to give praise and compliments. We need to tell people when they do a good job, because we can have a huge impact in the lives of other people. The right words spoken at the right time into the life of another person. We can create light where there's darkness. We can create hope where some feel hopeless. And we can create confidence with some who feel fear. And so here's what Paul says. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 29. Don't use foul or abusive language. Just throw away language. It's like rotten fruit. It's useless. You just throw it away. Don't use those kind of words. But instead, let everything you say be good and helpful, so that your words will be an encouragement to those who hear them. So how do you think God feels when we don't do that? When we use words to tear each other and destroy each other. We might think that he's angry, but Paul points to a different emotion. Look at verse 30, the next verse. It says, and do not bring what? Sorrow to God's Holy Spirit by the way you live, by the way you speak. But remember, he's identified you as his own, guaranteeing you'll be saved on the day of redemption. So this God who brings life to us when we become a follower of Christ, and then we turn around and use our words to destroy, that breaks God's heart. It brings sorrow. So as we finish up, we ask this question. So how can we do this? How can we do it better? Let me just give you three really practical things. Number one is seek God's help. Ephesians 4:30 there talks about we've been identified as God's own and we have a spirit within us, right? If we go back to James, remember the pictures that he gave us? Springs that come from under the ground, trees that bear fruit. Both of those pictures, there's a difference between what's happening under the ground and what's happening above the ground. It's pointing to the fact that our speech patterns really are a heart issue. And what we need is a new heart to start with. We need to seek God's help. Remember who he said could tame the tongue? Who did he say? No one. No one without God's supernatural help can control their tongue. So we need to seek God's help. Remember Jesus said, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So you show me somebody who's got a critical mouth, I'll show you somebody who's got a hateful heart. You show me somebody who's got a negative mouth, I'll show you somebody who's got a fearful heart. And you show me somebody who's got a filthy mouth, I'll show you somebody who's got a dirty heart still tainted with sin. And the wonderful thing is God offers us a new heart and a new relationship with him. If we were to go a couple more verses, chapter 5, verses 1 and 2, notice what Paul says. Imitate God, therefore, in everything you do. Why? Because you are his dear children. We ultimately can't control our tongue until we get a new heart and we have a new relationship with God, because that will give us new desires and new resources to be able to do what we cannot do on our own. And notice what he said at the end of verse 2. He, Jesus, loved us and offered himself as a sacrifice for us, a pleasing aroma to God. So your tongue problem might be a heart problem. And if you're here today, you've never come to know God. You've never appreciated that God loved you enough to send Jesus, who lived a perfect life, and he paid the punishment for our sin, for our wrong words, our misdeeds, our rebellion. And that's what it means to be a Christ follower, a Christian, is to be welcomed back into God's family. And he gives us a new and a transformed heart where we can begin a journey that will last a lifetime, but a journey of learning to give him more of ourselves. That will be the first step in controlling our tongue. There's a second one, and that is that we follow Jesus' example. We follow Jesus' example. That same passage there, chapter 5, verse 1 and 2. Can you just go back one slide, Connie? He says, imitate God and live a life filled with love, following the example of who? Of Christ. Everything in the New Testament points to this principle. Jesus would tell his disciples as they gathered around before he was getting ready to leave. He said, I've loved you, so now I want you to love other people because I've loved you. And I want you to love other people the way that I have loved you. And so we follow Jesus' example when it comes to this idea of building other people up. I was listening to a pastor talk about this past week, and here were some questions that really helped me. All right, I'm just going to ask you a couple questions. We'll take a quiz as we finish up here. What does God owe me? Answer? Nothing, right? God doesn't owe me anything. He's my creator. I rebelled and went my own way. He doesn't owe me anything, right? What do I owe God? Everything. So if I'm to love other people the same way that God loved me, and with the same motivation, I can take those same questions and apply them to people. And this is going to bother us. This is really difficult, right? Let's ask the question just a little bit different. What do other people owe me? Nothing, right? Boy, that's not how we feel, though, is it? That's not what we often say. But the truth is, we are all sinners equal to each other. So what do people owe me? Nothing. What do I owe other people? Everything. You say, that doesn't make sense. It doesn't, unless you understand what it means to be a follower of Jesus and to love the way Jesus loved. The biblical term for this is found in Ephesians, and it's called mutual submission. Let me show it to you here in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 21. It says, and further, submit to one another, but notice the why, out of reverence for Christ. That means I can approach every relationship with people understanding you don't owe me anything, but I owe you everything, not because you deserve it or because I'm nothing, but out of reverence for Jesus. Because I didn't deserve anything from him, but he loved me. And now I owe him everything. And if you were to look at chapter 5, he talks about being filled with the Spirit, empowered by the Spirit, following the Spirit's leadership. And then he says, when we do that, we will be singing songs and melodies in our heart to Christ. We'll be saying thank you. And we will be submitting one to another. And then he goes on to talk about some specific relationships. A husband and wife submit to one another. Parents and children, you submit to each other. A boss and an employee, you submit to one another. So if I go into every relationship understanding that that person doesn't owe me anything, but I owe them everything, that changes everything, right? So now, I've been married 30 years coming up in August, or is it already 30? It's coming up, right? Hey, I was close. It's 30 this summer, right? So there are things that my wife and I do in our relationship. So when she's kind and thinks about me, and she's on her way home and she says, hey, I'm going to Meijer. Do you need anything, right? I could end that conversation and just say, well, yeah, that's what a wife does. Or I can say, you know what? My wife doesn't owe me anything. She's doing something nice for me. Therefore, I'm going to thank her because I owe her everything. I'm going to say thank you. I'm going to give her praise and compliments for something we might say that's just her duty. Parents, to give praise and compliments and to build your kids up with your words. What do your kids owe you? In reality, nothing. What do you owe your kids? Everything. Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. So as you give and pour into your kids' lives, most of the time, your 12-year-old isn't going to come back and go, Mom and Dad, I just was thinking the other day, you know, I just appreciate that you love me, you care about me, you feed me, you pray for me, you want what's best for me, you help me with my homework, you do my laundry, you know, you just make my life so good and you care about me. Thank you so much. It's more likely they'll come and say, I need $5. Do you have it? Right? So I can either get put off by that and say, my kids, they don't appreciate anything. They owe me so much. But do they? So I keep pouring into them. I keep building them up with my words. Because Jesus did that for me. And you can take every relationship. Our relationship together here in the church. I remember my first week here. One of our volunteers came, and he comes every Wednesday night and serves. And when he was done, he was leaving that night, I said, thank you. Thank you for being here. And he said, oh, was I not supposed to be? Or like, right? What was he saying? He was just kind way of saying, well, I'm a leader. Of course I'll be here. I was saying to him, you don't owe me anything, though. I owe you everything. Thank you for being here and being with the kids tonight. Right? Does that make sense? This week, as I listened to that, that helped me a lot. And thinking about this idea of giving praise and compliments, telling people they do a good job, not just not saying the bad things, the harmful things, but saying the good things. And the reason is because Christians are builders, not destroyers. Would you guys say that out loud with me? Christians are builders, not destroyers. All right, last thing then. I want you to be real intentional about this week. This won't happen unless we really make an effort. So number 3 is be intentional. Now, as we've talked, every single one of us probably has some horror in our heart going, oh, I can think of so many things, or maybe one specific thing I said to somebody even just this week, maybe on the way to church this morning, or maybe it's been a while. So you may need to get along with God and say, thank you for sending Jesus. Will you forgive me for those words that were destructive? Take care of that with him. And then as much as possible, make it right with the people that maybe you've spoken the wrong way to or have been destructive in their life, right? But here's what I want to tell you. Just because you go back and say you're sorry or ask them for forgiveness, they may not respond well, especially if it's been a long pattern. It may not change anything in your relationship right away. And so I just want to encourage you to get started then. Don't try to keep making them say they're supposed to forgive you or this is that and this. Okay, I just wanted you to know what's in my heart. And then you start to be a builder in their life. And over time, you may be able, with God's help, to overcome some of those destructive words. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to say something nice or encouraging to someone in each of these three categories. Your family, your church, and then just one of these three, either work, school, or neighborhood, depending on your situation. And if you're using the notes in the bulletin, on the back side, there's something called next steps. There's a place for you to actually write that out. If somebody comes to mind right now, you can do that, but take time to do that when you get home. Or if you're in a home group, you'll have an opportunity to discuss that tonight, and maybe you'll share and have people pray for you there. And if you're not in a home group, we're doing a relaunch here in February. So next week and February 4th, you'll be able to sign up and join one. Certainly one of the benefits of a home group is being able to share those things and pray for one another. So that takes care of some people maybe that come to mind. Last thing I want you to do is pray this prayer today and maybe each day this week. Because we have this tremendous power to say the right thing at the right time and speak into other people's lives. But we may not know who that is. We may not know what opportunities God wants to bring our way this week. So would you be willing to pray something like this? God, today, would you help me to say the right thing at the right time to someone who needs me to speak into their life and build them up? And thank you for speaking into my heart today and for loving me. And I'm confident if you'll pray that prayer today and maybe each day this week or several days, I'm confident God will give you that opportunity because our words have so much power. And as a follower of Christ especially, we are builders and we use our words to build. And how would it change North Park if tens and twenties, if the majority of us saw ourselves as builders, and as we entered into conversation looking for the right thing to say at the right time, to speak into someone else's life, to build them up, that would be life-changing for us as a church. It could be life-changing for your family, for your workplace, for every interaction that you have. I trust that you'll follow God's leading in that. Let's pray. God, this is such a hard message to speak even because I know how much I talk and use so many throwaway words. But God, would you help us this morning? If we need a new heart and we've never come to know Christ, God, would you help us to call out to you today? Invite you into our life. If we need more help in understanding that, may we seek out someone this morning to find out more about that. God, for those of us that are followers of Christ, help us to understand the seriousness of being a builder and not a destroyer. Would you help us to put these into practice this week? May we build each other up on a regular basis, and may that change the atmosphere of our church so that we will continue to grow as we help each other, and that as other people come in, they'll notice, and we can tell them about our God who is so good. God, we can't do this, but we need you to do it. And we ask this, that you would be gracious enough to do that in our lives and in our church. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. It's been our